Working Cows Podcast, episode 102.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows podcast, here with an episode regarding the Beefmasters breed. And we're going to talk today to Colin Osborne of the Beefmasters breed. He's the executive director of the Beefmasters breed, and I'm really excited to talk to him about what Beefmasters can do on operations to involve heterosis and to benefit people by adding some efficiency to their operations. If you study and pay attention to Beefmasters very long, you'll find out that they were founded on six essentials, and those are going to come up a few times in this interview. And I just want to remind you of those on the front end, what they are. They are weight, conformation, milk production, fertility, disposition, and hardiness. And we're going to talk in depth about what all that is with Colin Osborne, executive director of the Beefmasters Breeders Union. Colin, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows podcast.
Thanks for having us, Clay. We certainly appreciate the opportunity to come on and visit a little bit more about Beefmaster cattle and Beefmaster genetics.
I would love to start out by just giving people a little bit of a history of the breed and how it came to be, and then what the motivations were for getting started with the breed.
Certainly. So the Beefmaster breed came about basically through a necessity for the Lassiter family. It was begun in the early 30s by Tom Lassiter, and some of the concepts that they used go back even a good bit earlier than that, to the turn of the century at 1900, and how they were mating cattle and breeding cattle and ultimately creating the Beefmaster breed. The family was well adapt to the beef industry at the time, and had built a nice sized ranch and Equitable Holdings down in South Texas, in deep South Texas, around Falfurrias. And then due to some health issues over the years, and the oncoming droughts in the 50s and depression, there were some drastic changes that went through the family, and out of necessity, they had to revamp and kind of start over. And that's when they started becoming more and more adapt to what the Beefmaster is today, and what we see today. Basically, they took existing herds of Hereford cattle and Indicus cattle and Shorthorn cattle and began to cross those animals. They took Hereford Brahmins and mated those to Shorthorn Brahmins at bulls, and then we started getting the modern Beefmaster animal that was developed. It was over time, and certainly took some time to get there, but these cattle were developed so that they could maintain what they had left of their ranch, and out of a necessity to survive back in the depression and the droughts that ensued in those early years. So that's kind of a little bit of the history on where the breed came from, how they were developed, and kind of just the general principles that were applied at that time.
So the motivation sounds like was basically surviving through difficult times.
That's exactly right. And in a lot of the history that you read on the breed, they reference that over and over, that it was all basically just survival and getting by. And when they came to a three-way cross, mating those F1 Brahmin Herefords to Shorthorn Brahmins, we started to see some fairly significant differences in the quality of cattle, the growth of those cattle, and just the overall development. And that led them further down the path of producing more and more of those cattle because they were more profitable.
And how would you say the breed is different today than it was even in those days, or how has it progressed?
Well, certainly over the years, as the industry has moved and changed, the six essentials and that the breed was built and founded off of are still in place and still important in breeding decisions today for many of our breeders and members that are out there. But they have been able to change and conform, I guess is the right word, and been flexible enough to move with the market and the industry. Demands today, we certainly know, are different than what they were 10 years ago, 50 years ago, and 100 years ago. And our cattle have all changed. So I guess modernization, adapting to new technologies that are out there and utilizing those technologies in a way that helps keep the breed moving forward. As far as the cattle themselves, we transitioned from some of the larger cattle back in the 80s and 90s down to the more modern, more moderate framed cattle that we see in the industry today. And the breed's done a fantastic job of moderating size, but continuing to emphasize growth and maternal abilities and efficiency to get us to where we are today.
Over and over again in my research for this episode to talk to you today, I heard the word adaptability and efficiency. Those words, adaptability and efficiency, were repeated often. And can you talk a little bit about how the adaptability, we'll start with the adaptability of this animal, and kind of give us a sense of the scope of the different styles of operations that we see it used in, and even the different regions of the world where it's being used successfully?
So our Beefmaster genetics today, I'll say, and for quite some time, have been identified as extremely sought after and extremely high quality females. They're cows that, as you just mentioned, are extremely adaptable to whatever environment we seem to put them in, regardless if that's the high deserts of the Northwest down to the low country in South Florida and along the Gulf Coast, even in the southern Southwest. The cattle have adapted and done well and really thrive in probably some of the harshest climates and conditions that we can put them in. Going back to a little more of the history in South Texas, where those cattle were developed, that's what they were developed on. They had to maintain their body condition on their own in range conditions. They had to wean calves every year. They had to make sure and perform in order to stay in the herd when they were developing the breed. And so all of those essentials that went into making the ranch profitable really shaped and molded the Beefmaster breed in the beginning, making them extremely efficient, producing more pounds per calf in terms of live weight and converting that over to pounds of beef produced. And so we found that the cattle were bred to be efficient. They were developed that way. And the hardiness and adaptability that goes along with that and being able to adapt from the mountains down in Mexico to the high deserts in the Northwest, even up into the Midwest or around the, and into the Great Lakes area. We have Beefmaster herds in all parts of the country and across the world that are very adaptable and thrive in those conditions and continue to grow. We're seeing more and more growth further north from the Gulf Coast up into the Midwest regions with our black cow herd and the commercial industry today and the Angus base that's out there. We feel that these cows are and genetics are so adaptable that they can go into any part of the country and help producers from a crossbreeding standpoint, making them more efficient, more profitable, and better for what they can do today.
you mentioned the Midwest and specifically, I think the Great Lakes region. That's deep snow country. That's bitter cold, and I think that probably most people's conception of the Beefmaster breed is that they're a light-hided animal. Can you talk a little bit about how they're being used successfully? Are they a cross there, or are they pure Beefmaster genetics? What are you seeing in that region?
So we see both. We're seeing more and more of our Beefmaster genetics spread across the commercial cow herds because of the efficiency and heterosis that we see from those crossbreeding programs. And we've certainly have seed stock breeders that are producing purebred Beefmasters in those areas as well. It is tough, and there's, as with anything, there's always a change in those animals to become adaptive. But we see it over and over how well these cattle can go into a new environment, make the adaptation that they need to thrive and take off and do well in several different regions.
And just guessing here, I would guess that in those countries, maybe you see those Hereford traits come through a little bit more in that part of the world. And then maybe down south, you see the Indicus influence shine through a little bit more. I don't know for sure, but that would be my assumption.
So the larger herds that we see, of course, because of Mother Nature, we tend to see cattle that are a little tighter hided, have a little less Indicus characteristic to them the further north we go. But we're starting to see a bit of a change in that as well, that they're coming back to some of the bulls that show a little more Brahman characteristics and Indicus characteristic because they get a little more punch and a little more heterosis out of those animals that tend to have a few more Indicus characteristics. So our seed stock guys are certainly in tune with what works in those areas where these cattle can adapt. But when outside genetics are brought in, heterosis is key to most of the successful commercial cow herds out there today. And heterosis is such a powerful tool that many of the cattlemen are implementing and have been implementing for a long time. They really thrive when we can cross these Beefmaster genetics back on some of our English-based cows.
Right, and one of the industry experts I've spoken with said that in his experience, and he travels the world speaking, and he said in his experience, the most heat stressed cattle he's seen are in the North American continent. And that's because of the English genetics that we have here so prominently. And you talk to somebody from England, like I have recently, Bob Havard talked about their climate there is so much more moderate than the continental United States. And so they tend to not have the large temperature swings. And so part of being a good animal fit to this environment is the ability to deal with that high temperature. And I think that's probably what you're seeing there with that Indicus influence.
Certainly. The Indicus component of our Beefmaster cattle is what makes them probably as adaptable as what they are. It wouldn't be the modern Brahman genetics that we would see out there today that were used when these cattle were developed. They were truly Indicus cattle that made their way from India in some of the different strains of Indicus cattle that would have been used back in those days. And certainly, we all know right now how big some of these temperature swings are. We're right in the center of a pretty big heat wave in the southern half of the whole U.S., and it tends to look to get a little warmer every year, it seems like, at least for a period of time. And there's certainly some benefit to having cattle that are very adaptable, especially when we start talking about these tremendous heat stresses, Elm.
So do you see the breed being used predominantly in a maternal herd or a terminal herd, or are there some of both? How do you see the breed being used?
We really see both. I think you would be hard pressed to find anybody that wouldn't recognize the maternal attributes of the Beefmaster breed, and we certainly focus on those because they are such a strong maternal female that does such a good job of being productive for several years and being very adaptive. But they, routinely we see Beefmaster bulls put back over crossbred cows. And because of heterosis and the genetic makeup of our breed, we're able to see added growth, added pounds, which in turn mean more dollars for those guys that are weaning heavier calves. So it's kind of that question of where do we go? Where do we put our eggs? Do we put them all in one basket? And I think because of the way the breed was developed, it was developed kind of to handle both of those scenarios. Yes, certainly to be efficient and yield more pounds of true beef product, but also having a maternal influence out there that's undeniable.
I mentioned the six essentials in my introduction to this episode, but I'll remind you again, they've been mentioned a couple of times here in this episode. They are weight, conformation, milk production, fertility, disposition, and hardiness. Can you talk a little bit about weight? What was being sought when they chose to include weight in the six essentials?
So weight's always been an important factor, simply from the standpoint of pure dollars. If we can sell more pounds of beef, we're going to return more dollars, especially when we are looking at when the breed was developed. If we can turn around and sell a 700 pound steer rather than a 625 or 600 pound steer, where we're going to see more total dollars returned. So weight was a fairly simple process for the guys back then. The more weight they had, the more dollars they could produce. And I think that holds true in most scenarios today. There's certainly some programs out there that we can benefit in carcass quality, and carcass quality and characteristics do drive a lot of premiums, but it's still hard to overcome pure weight. When we can sell more total pounds, we're going to yield more total dollars.
Can you talk about the carcass quality? I think that some people might just have that question in their mind, given the indicus influence. Can you talk a little bit about the carcass quality of the Beefmaster animal and some crosses that can maybe even add to it?
Certainly. So we do see a good bit of kill data coming back in from different programs and producers out there that are using Beefmaster bulls over a different selection of cows, from Angus and Red Angus cows to more continental cross cattle. And the most recent set of kill data that we had come in, there was a set of Charlotte Angus cross cows that had Beefmaster bulls back over the top of them. And those calves graded at 80% choice. So we certainly are not completely focused on carcass quality because of our maternal abilities and the growth components that we work with the Beefmaster breed. But it is something in a modern set of genetics that's becoming more of a focus. We understand that those premiums are out there. We can add to those and keep our maternal abilities and our heterosis intact, then we certainly are that much further ahead. So, yes, the Beefmaster breed can certainly go out there and reach some of those choice premiums and higher when they're available, like they are today. But I don't think you'll ever see the breed lose sight of its history and heritage in terms of growth, efficiency, and maternal abilities.
Yeah, that's encouraging to hear. Is that kind of one of the things that you're attempting to focus on now, is some carcass merit and some of the things that you're, without losing focus, as you said, you're starting to try and select for some more carcass merit in the herd?
It is. You know, one of the things that we know all too well is that we can never stop improving. I think if we ever get complacent as a breed, then we start to lose focus and lose some of what we are here to do. And we know how the premiums are taken advantage of out there in the the industry today and how many dollars they can add. That is something that our board and our breeders are starting to focus on and have been focusing on in recent years. As we talked about more modern genetics being used, there's been a good bit more emphasis put on carcass quality and making sure that we don't fall behind compared to where the rest of our industry partners are out there.
I've got some questions from my private Facebook group. And one of them is, he says, I'm looking to use Beefmaster bulls on Angus cows to make F1 females for added longevity. Do you put Beefmaster bulls back with the F1 females or use another continental breed to increase hybrid vigor?
So I think that is that's an extremely good question that we get quite often from the standpoint of working with some larger commercial producers. And I would say it kind of depends on that producer's goals. If his true goals are to make some females that are extremely versatile, extremely adaptable, and can be mated to any other cross out there, I think going back and having, in essence, a three-quarter Beefmaster female running around is really, really difficult to overcome. In terms of just quality females that can last a lifetime. We routinely see Beefmaster females that stay in production 10 plus years. And it's anything we start to see over 10 years in a lot of these scenarios, we feel that's a pretty big added advantage when we don't have to replace that female. I would tell you yes, in the scenario of creating more quality females, putting Beefmaster bulls back over Beefmaster Angus F1s is a very good cross and would yield some very good results. If that goal is to just produce more pounds, certainly the heaviest calves we see are coming back out of that three breed rotation where we have English, Beefmaster, and a Continental breed in the mix where we can have English Beefmaster cross females and a Continental bull back over the top of them. We see tremendous results, extremely heavy weaning calves that are yielding lots of dollars.
I'll ask two questions here. What's the most popular cross that you see Beefmasters being used on? That's the first question.
So the two breeds that we see, I guess it would actually be three breeds, but are going to be Red Angus and Angus. So our Angus-based cow herd that's out there, there's a lot of Beefmaster bulls going back over the top of those. And then we still see a lot of Continental cross cows that were kept after the industry has rebuilt the cow herd, and there were more and more of those Continental cross females kept and retained. We see quite a few Beefmaster bulls going back over the top of them. So certainly English-based, specifically Angus and Red Angus. And then we still see a lot of the Continental and Charolais cross or Simmental cross cattle that are out there and Beefmaster bulls going back over the top of them as well.
And I guess the second question then is, what is the most profitable cross? And I guess from my perspective, that is using the least amount of acres to wean a calf or using the least amount of grass to wean a calf. What are the most profitable crosses that you see?
The most profitable crosses in terms of just weaning the heaviest calves are going to be back on those Continental cross cows. There's no doubt in our eyes and the programs we see these calves coming off of, Charolais cross with Angus, Red Angus, and Beefmaster genetics back over the top of them, or a Red Angus Beefmaster female and Continental bulls back over the top of them. That cross is generating more pounds than any of the others that we see out there, and we're weaning some of the heaviest calves that we see. When we look at a few of these cattle in terms of just F1 crosses and not talking about three breed rotations, we routinely see straight bred cattle that are being outweighed by our Beefmaster cross cattle coming out of the same places, that 75 to 100 pounds.
Hmm. Yep. And can you give me a few reasons why someone should consider using Beefmaster genetics?
So one of the six essentials that a lot of times gets overlooked is disposition. We were down in South Texas going through a set of bulls yesterday, and there were 100 bulls in a couple pens, and we had about 60 people there. And these are bulls that were brought into a bull test and kicked out in 20 to 50 acre traps and developed in two different groups. They were brought up, put side by side, and we ran 30 to 40 people into each one of those pens. And the disposition on the bulls is just fantastic. Again, it was one of the six essentials the breed was founded and built around. And often it's overlooked, but how easy these cattle handle, how, for lack of a better word, just smart and intelligent they are. It's really nice to be able to go out there and handle these cattle in such a manner that we don't have to worry too much about disposition and really difficult problems. So that's one of the big selling points that we see, especially as we get to some of the smaller producers that are out there that we hear about all the time, is just how easygoing and docile the cattle are and in the breed as a whole. So disposition is fantastic and one of our real big calling cards. On top of that, in today's industry, heterosis is tremendously difficult to overlook. In our opinion, heterosis will return more dollars with less cost than anything else that a commercial producer can do. In our eyes, it's kind of a must to have a crossbred program out there generating these cattle that can not only stay healthier and wean heavier calves, but can stay and reach out to some of those premiums that become available from a carcass quality standpoint and yield more total pounds of beef.
Yeah, it sounds good. Heterosis and disposition, always a concern for everybody in the industry. And I think you guys have been providing some compelling answers to the questions that the industry is asking. Are there programs within the industry that people can take advantage of, or within the breed that people can take advantage of as they start to think about how they might implement it on their operation?
So we do have some female programs that are out there. We've got a commercial female that's called an Essential E6 Beefmaster Female. And that's just a commercial Beefmaster cross that's at least 50% Beefmaster. We have people looking for these genetics all the time. I'll tell you, it's a challenge to find them, because a lot of the guys that are producing these cattle, they turn around and either have them sold immediately before they become available on the open market, or they're producing them to restock their own herd somewhere. And so it's the E6 female or commercial Beefmaster female is tremendously sought after. And that's a program that we look to continue to grow and be able to offer more and more genetics across the U.S. Certainly.
I think we're coming towards the end, but I would like to maybe get your perspective on why the Hereford Shorthorn and Brahman were the ones that ended up being selected. Did kind of the Hereford Shorthorn bring the disposition, and or what were some of the motivations in selecting those three specific breeds?
So it was probably a function of what the family had, kind of to start with. The Lassiter family had a herd of registered Brahman or Indicus cattle at that time. They had a herd of registered Hereford cattle at that time, and had remembered back to a time when Tom's grandfather had a set of Shorthorn Brahman cattle. And they were very sought after in South Texas, and they performed tremendously well. And so when they went through all the changes and had to downsize and go through the hard times, they were looking for a way to generate more dollars. And basically it just came down to we're making F1 crosses, Brahmins and Herefords, through these two seed stock herds. But what happens if we can introduce another breed into that mix? And when they started putting Shorthorn Brahmin bulls back over the top of the F1 Hereford Brahmin females, the thought was that there's no denying that this calf is much, much better. They're faster growing, they're heavier, they're hardier and healthier. And they started really getting a lot of interest then from just the guys at the local markets. And that kind of began their seed stock business with Beefmaster cattle. More and more people started coming to the ranch and looking for that three-way cross. And hence started the Beefmaster breed and leading us to where we are today.
Well, Colin, I think you kind of brought us full circle, and I think that puts a nice bow on this episode, and I appreciate your time today, and I look forward to partnering with Beefmaster Breeders and featuring some of their producers and what they're doing in the breed.
Well, we appreciate y'all's time and the visit today as well, Clay, and we look forward to a great partnership moving forward.
Well, I'm excited about that partnership with the Beefmaster Breeders. Excited to feature some of their producers in upcoming episodes or in little ad spots in the upcoming episodes. You'll be hearing from them about how Beefmasters is adding to the profitability of their ranch businesses over the next few months. So going forward next week, we are excited to sit down with Nicole Masters. So really looking forward to episode 103 of the Working Cows podcast with Nicole Masters coming your way as soon as possible early next week.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.